Welcome to Ice Time, the Buffalo News and Hockey Podcast. I'm Lance Lysowski, the Sabres beat writer for the Buffalo News, joined, of course, by Mike Harrington, our columnist. Mike, yeah, we just never know what we're going to see every night. We say it every week. The way that this team wins games, the way that they lose games, it's unlike anything I've ever seen when you look at it, its totality. And, of course, you look, they've won three of their last four games, Mike. Washington
Capitals. Who scored the final goal last night?
Who scored
Wednesday night's last goal? Was it Ryan McLeod? Was it Tage Thompson? Have they decided yet?
Yeah.
Like an hour for them to tell us that Ryan McLeod got the final goal once the NHL made up their minds. Just another bizarre way for the Sabres to end the game.
They can't win 4-5-0 on any kind of regular basis. What have we seen? One of those kind of wins all season. It always has to go down to the wire with a 6-on-5 in which they get scored on again. And Lindy Ruff has to come into the, Lindy Ruff wants to be excited. He wants to be proud of his group, but he comes into the press conference after the game. You can just see how exhausted and frustrated he is that even with a win, they have to do it that way. Victories over the Washington Capitals, Ottawa Senators, and the Carolina Hurricanes, Mike, by winning three out of their last four. Yeah, if you go back to December 23rd, which was the day that the winless streak ended, and this team is playing a lot better than it did during that winless streak. There's a lot of reasons why. They're finally, it was interesting because Alex Tuch told me on earlier this week, I don't even remember what day it was at this point, that he just has so much more confidence in their ability to bounce back game to game this season compared to the last two. And that's shown itself with these starts, but it's difficult to really get a read on this team, Mike, with the way that, they're getting up early in these games, which they weren't able to do last season. But again, the second periods and third periods.
They're 6-3-1 in the last 10, heading into Friday night's game against Pittsburgh. 6-3-1 since the winless streak ended. They're second in the league in goal differential in the first period. They consistently get ahead. The last three games, they've been ahead 2-0. They have won two of the three games. They have 15 blown leads this year. 15 games they led, they didn't win. Six of which they led by multiple goals and they didn't win. The biggest thing I see is they're ready to play. The first period stats say that. The leads say that. But as we know, it's obviously an overriding theme of the season, their mental ability to stay with the game. Now, what we saw against Carolina, same thing happened, 6-on-5, another goal, cross-ice pass, Luukkonen can't get over to make the save. On Martinatis, it's 3-2, the panic is setting in, Lindy Ruff calls his timeout. He didn't call a timeout against Seattle, I don't understand why, I think he forgot. But he he's done this a lot this year, he's called them. He calls the timeout, tells them, hey, we've practiced the 6-on-5, attack the puck. Someone attacked the puck, and what happened? Jack Quinn attacked the puck. Peyton Krebs attacked the puck. All of a sudden, Carolina wasn't set up in the Buffalo zone, and they finally got the empty net goal. Of course, Thompson takes the puck, shoots it down the ice, hits it off the goalpost, where you're thinking, here comes the nightmare, where they sweep it back up and get the tying goal, but McLeod turned on the afterburners, got to the puck ahead of Burns. I like the last minute how they played. Finally, we saw some play that didn't include panic. We saw some purpose instead of panic, and I really think it makes a big difference, and it got them a win.
Yeah, but you look at the third, they still had zero shots on goal in the third period.
Talking about the last minute.
Well, I understand that, but Lindy Ruff is kind of describing it as a possible turning point. Zero, and they're averaging 6.4,
right.
6.47 shots on goal in the third period over the last 15 games. They're doing That's nothing in third periods most of these games. It's bizarre, and I'm curious to hear your opinion on what to make of this, because the way that they play the first periods is not the way they play the third.
One of the things I'm really seriously starting to wonder about now, yes, this looks like a very large mental block for a lot of guys. I don't know. I mean, Lance, have you thought of this? I'm wondering, is there a problem with strength and conditioning on this team?
Fair question to ask, because you think about the way that a lot of teams in the league play. It's the complete opposite with a lot of these teams that we see across the league. Carolina's a good example. Look at them in the third period.
Their game.
Yeah, right. They build toward it. They don't just expend all their energy in the first period. And I think some of it, Mike, is honestly just trustworthy depth. You look at those lines, like the Carolina game's a good example in the third period. Look at who Lindy Ruff was leaning on in the final minutes of that game. It was his bottom two lines.
Right.
It wasn't his top two. And he had to change his centers on his top two lines to get, because they weren't doing anything. And that led to some changes. McLeod ends up with the hat trick. Cousins scores. But still, like, the fact that he used the Kozak line, he used the Krebs line in the 6-on-5 situations, like, he's not getting enough consistency from his top players. There's no question about it. You could say that some of it is Tage Thompson's injury. That's a big piece of it. Dylan Cousins, we're going to talk about him pretty soon here. J.J. Paterka was terrible in that game against Carolina.
Was he on the ice?
He was turning it over every time he touched the puck, so that's the only time you ever noticed him. He's a whole other topic I'm looking forward to us having at some point here in the next week or so. But yeah, I don't – Alex Tuch is their only consistent top six guy. Ryan McLeod did it last night, yeah, but he plays too much on the perimeter sometimes. He drives Lindy crazy with that. That's the one thing that's held McLeod back, in Lindy's opinion. He's just on the perimeter too much. He's not attacking the middle of the ice. It's that sort of thing. So they're not getting consistency from their top players aside from Alex Tuch. And when you're getting in these tight situations, you shouldn't have to rely on your third and fourth line, but that's what you had to do in that game.
Yeah. And they're scarred. There's no way around it. They're scarred by the Colorado games,
leadership void game,
and the Toronto game. And it's a leadership issue. And I don't know how you ever get around that with this club this season, because every time you have a lead, it's tough to not go back. I mean, let's face it, Lance. When Nate just put that puck in last night, you heard the whole building groan. Yep. And everybody's going, here we go again.
And you saw
You saw the body language.
On the first goal. You saw immediately when they gave up that first goal, the puck goes off of Benson's stick and past UPL, which UPL should have stopped. We're going to talk about him too. You saw the noticeable difference on the bench, on the ice.
Don't wait months for new windows on your home. Express Windows can have them installed in just weeks with high-quality double-hung windows starting at only $359. Call Express Windows for a free at-home estimate or stop by our showroom on Delaware Avenue in Tonawanda.
I'm going to pivot to our second topic. I'm going to change it up here, Mike. I want to talk about leadership because it is something that the TNT broadcast kept bringing up. We just don't understand it either. How is this team, you look at the first periods, how are they as bad in the second and the third? Look at their leadership group. Alex Tuch is the most experienced guy there, but he doesn't like to lead with his voice. He's talked about it. I like leading by example, which he does night in and night out to his credit, but they need him to take on more. He needs to be a voice of reason.
Yeah, I wish Alex Tuch would kind of have a conniption once in a while. Some of these guys.
Yeah, because he brings it every night, but...
Yeah, and he's played in the Stanley Cup final, and he's played in multiple Western Conference finals, and I just wish he was a little more vocal on things. Break a stick in the locker room once in a while, something along those lines, because these guys need to be snapped out of their funk when they get in these situations. And, a lot of times a goal against snaps a team out of its funk. This team, one goal against, turns into 3 and 4 pretty quick. And until they figure out that issue, they're just never going to get out of it. And I just think leadership is going to require another veteran or two in here at some point, whether it's at the deadline, whether it's next year, because they just don't have it.
Yeah, get rid of 2-year defensemen. Get rid of Joakim Haru and Bryson and swap them in for guys who have actually won something.
Right.
Who bring those intangibles that you're lacking in your lineup. You don't have to stray from the grand plan, like, to be the youngest team in the NHL every year. You could still do that if you'd like, but swap three guys out, bring three in who have actually... it's the thing. Like, Tage Thompson's a good player, but he's done nothing but lose in the NHL because he's spent that entire time in Buffalo. Darlene has every aspect that you want out of a captain, but he's only 24 years old, and he's done nothing but lose in the NHL because he's only been in Buffalo. Matias Samuelsson didn't deserve a letter. I still don't understand why they gave him one. I guess it's because Bowen Byram is a pending RFA, and you don't know if he's going to be here in a few months because he's the guy who really does deserve that letter. And Cousins, he's in his head half the time, so it's tough for a guy like that who's 23 trying to get back to scoring to lead and have that voice. So, and Zucker, again, probably deserves a letter, pending UFA, so you can't do it. So, yes, bring in some guys who understand how to win, who aren't afraid to challenge other people, because we don't see that enough with this group. We don't. You don't see it in practice. Darlene does it. When Darlene and Krebs got into it earlier this year, Mike, you remember what the reaction was from the outside? Oh, my God.
People freaked out. Oh, my God. It was good. I liked it.
You need to see
more of that. I mean, people don't realize 10, 15 years ago when Briere and Drury and Vanek and Roy and all those guys were here, there were tiffs in practice all the time. But there wasn't social media to film everything and cause everything to become a crisis. You used to see Vanek and Andrew Peters going at it in practice. If Vanek and Andrew Peters went at it in practice today, screaming at each other on the ice, it'd become a thing. Nobody wants anything to become a thing anymore. And Krebs and Darlene became a thing. And let me tell you, Krebs and Darlene wasn't great. You know, the hit was low, whatever. I've seen stuff like that in practice all the time. Not a long time, but back in the day, not 30 years ago, you know, they just need a little more of that with this team, a little more fire and brimstone. And sometimes that's going to require some older guys.
And you think about it, it's been an issue with this organization for, I mean, at least throughout my time here, Mike. I remember my first locker clean out in April 2019 when Rasmus Ristolainen tells all of us that, yeah, we need to challenge each other more. That's not how he ordered it. I'll keep it PG for the podcast, but
yeah,
he wanted them to challenge each other. He thought it was just so too much kumbaya and going through the motions. Jack Eichel always wanted veterans. He kept saying it. We need more veterans in this room. We need guys who understand how to win. And they didn't do it. They brought in the wrong people. They brought in guys who weren't leaders like Connor Sherry. And it put way too much on your young captain's plate. And they're doing the same right now to Darlene, in my opinion, where they're forcing him to really carry that mantle, you know. And it's going to get worse if Zucker gets traded and they lose some of these guys at the deadline. To Kevin Adams' credit, he's brought in Ryan McLeod, Connor Clifton, Eric Johnson didn't work out, but he's won a Stanley Cup. Like, they've tried to bring in some veteran type of guys. Some of them work, some of them haven't, but you got to do more. You know, and last summer, bringing back guys like Bryson and Yoki Haru, you knew they weren't good enough. Like, you knew that you should have upgraded there, but they didn't. And here we are. Like, you're still not, you don't have enough of those voices that they can really step up, challenge guys, and, you know, get these guys to snap out of it and get them out of their heads.
Everybody talks about the top six forward thing, and I just think it's overplayed.
It
Skinner's
is.
Doing nothing at Edmonton anyway, just for the record. And Zucker certainly has been a great addition. The bigger issue here has been the lack of veteran defensemen brought in. They don't have a right-handed shot to play with Owen Power yet, still 3 years into his career. They don't have veteran leadership on the blue line. Clifton's a nice addition, but he's also a third pair 15-minute guy. You know, that's to me, been a bigger flaw of Kevin Adams than the whole top six forward thing, which fans just talk about ad nauseum and isn't the issue that it's made out to be.
Swung and missed it on Eric Johnson, swung and missed on Ilya Labushkin. And yeah, just kind of being complacent with bringing back guys because they're well-liked or they fit in the room, or maybe they, like, what about Jacob Bryson made you believe that he was going to fit under Lindy Ruff? He may have been okay with Don Granato when you didn't have to hit anybody, but Jacob Bryson's not a Lindy Ruff player. Henry Yoki Haru is not a Lindy Ruff player.
No.
We can see that. How can a general manager and entire hockey ops staff not see it? It's bizarre. It really makes you scratch your head because, like, those guys are NHL players. They could fit elsewhere. They don't fit on this team. Like,
the nerds probably say on their spreadsheets that they do.
Breakouts, breakout, breakout. But those two guys, they're good at breaking the puck out of the zone. But once they're in their D zone, it's time to defend. They don't know what they're doing most of the time.
That's about it.
It's a problem. So Dylan Cousins is our third topic, Mike. There's going to be a lot of trade talk surrounding Dylan Cousins as we approach the deadline. And all of it is driven by the fact that Kevin Adams is just getting a lot of calls on Dylan Cousins.
That's entirely
what it is. Dylan Cousins does not want out. Kevin Adams is not eager to move Dylan Cousins. And guess what, everybody? Dylan Cousins is the first or second best center on this team right now because Tage Thompson can't even play the position with the injuries that he's dealing with. So you want to trade another center, what, 9-10 months after you already got rid of Mittelstad?
Right. You had three centers and you said, well, we can't pay three centers, so we have to trade Mittelstad.
And you're going to trade another one.
Now you're going to trade another one and you're going to trade the right-handed shot center. There is a reason, Lance, that everybody is rumored to be interested in talking to the Sabres at Dylan Cousins is because everyone's calling the Sabres because everyone wants a right-handed center, a right shot center. And aren't you going to want Dylan Cousins, 6'3", 23 years old, former 31 goal scorer? So everybody's going to call and Kevin Adams is going to take everybody's call. And he's going to say, sure, if you want Dylan Cousins, you're going to have to give me this, 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 and this. And then you get all these aggregators and all these insiders saying, oh, Dylan Cousins is on the block and Buffalo's in talks. No, Buffalo's just answering the phone. I hate this trade stuff. There's a big difference between making calls and answering the phone. They're and just answering the phone.
And some of this is so much of this is just gamesmanship where teams leak it to reporters because they want to stir it up. They want to stir it up. And Buffalo's an easy target because they're at the bottom of the standings. And it's an organization where a lot of teams around the league are saying, well, we bring that guy in. He's going to play a lot better on our team than he is there. I mean, you look at the history of the Sabres and how many guys have left and gone on to greener pastures. And Dylan Cousins would absolutely be that, in my opinion. He's not playing well enough right now. I get it. And you can sit here and tell me he's not a play-driving center. There are very few actual play drivers in this league. It's a very short list. It's like us throwing around the term superstar around pro sports nowadays. There's not that many of them. All right. And people are talking about Elias Pettersson, Mike. I don't know where you stand on him, but if he wants to leave Vancouver because JT Miller was too mean to him. Is that somebody you really want on your team given all the problems in Buffalo right now?
No. And what happens if Vancouver trades JT Miller? They don't need to trade Elias Pettersson.
Exactly.
They got rid of the guy. They got rid of the boogeyman who makes Elias Pettersson uncomfortable.
Yeah, making all the excuses when they lose in the playoffs. Like, if you're going to trade Dylan Cousins, you better do that right. You better get somebody who's not only experienced but is also a center and is going to make your team better. And, like, I just don't envision a scenario where that's going to happen.
No, and again, I just don't think that's going to happen. I think there's moves to be made here. And I'd be hard-pressed to see them trading Dylan Cousins simply because you'd have to really tell me who you're getting back in a trade for Dylan Cousins, because he's a unique player. He's a unique player who isn't playing all that well. Okay, I get it. He hasn't had a great year. 23 years old, right shot center. I'm just not dealing that unless you give me a lot back, and I just don't think they're going to get a lot back.
That's the thing. I'm not selling low on Dylan Cousins.
No.
And I think that it's easy for fans and people on social media to suggest that that's what they should do. The reality is, Mike, like, you're not going to sell a player with that value for 10 cents on the dollar because he's going through it and he's 23 years old. Remember that fact. Our next topic, we probably threw in a couple extra ones here, Mike, but to be honest with you, let's blend this one in. So this is still topic three, but Ryan McLeod's back in the top six, which is personally where I think he belongs, especially right now.
He's the number one center right now.
So he defends well. He's a playmaker. He is one of the fastest skaters in the NHL. That's not hyperbole. And he's showing us, if he's put in the right role with the right line mates, this guy can produce. And he may not have, you know, he may not be what the Edmonton Oilers thought he was going to be or what their fans want him to be, but he is somebody that this team, the Sabres, need to make a priority in signing this guy. Because you can talk here about, oh, I want to trade Cousins, I want to trade this guy. You're running out of centers, and this is a guy that you gave up Matt Savoy to get. McLeod's young. He's an RFA this summer. That's one of the other missteps I just don't understand. Like, I know you don't want to rush to sign players, especially where the Sabres were at, but they trade for Bo Byram, and they're slow playing this year where his price is going to keep going up. Why didn't you sign Byram last summer? You knew he was part of your long-term plan. Why didn't you sign Ryan McLeod as soon as that trade went down? Because he can end up getting more expensive.
Because Kevin Adams is now gun shy because they overpaid Cousins and they overpaid Matias Samuelson, and Terry Pegula is probably telling him no more long-term deals right now. You know, let's be efficient and economic and whatever else. And to me, I just think now you're in a situation where, like you said, Byram's price is going up. McLeod, you can use some of the money you were earmarking for Quinn and Peterka to sign McLeod, but Byram is going to be real expensive the way things are going. And I just think they have to figure out what they're going to do. I need Kevin Adams to make moves. I can't believe they've done nothing here. They did have a 13-game winless streak, but he can't make moves willy-nilly either, just to make moves, just to satisfy the fans, just to satisfy me. I made a move and make it be a stupid move. So I get that he's slow pacing things, but I don't think he should walk himself into the corner either on Byram and on McLeod when he's got RFAs, because what are you going to do if Byram decides, look, I'm not taking a qualifying offer. I want a long-term deal at big money. Samuelson's making 7-year deal at 4.75 per. Well, if he's making 4.75, Byram's got to be make what, 7?
He's getting seven, at least eight? Seven. He's getting at least seven. I'm writing about it today, actually. A little bit of a spoiler alert. But yes, the projection right now, as things stand, is around seven. But right. at the end of the season, when he finishes averaging 24 minutes per game on the top pair, it's going to be eight.
Right.
That's what you're like. You're looking at Owen power money. So you're going to be allocating. You've already allocating $19.35 million to Dahlin and Power. You add another eight onto that. So you're allocating then $27.35 million to your D.
Well, the cap is going to be up. The cap is going to be up quite a
That's
bit.
That's fair. And your forwards. You're
not paying Quinn and Peterka.
Yep. And your forwards. If you got cost control with Cousins, like I in the end, Mike, like I think that contract's going to. It's got the potential to still age well. I'm not giving up on him yet. Because if he ends up getting back to 30 goals and 70 points at $7 million as your first or second line center.
He's cheap.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like you locked up two very important spots.
It's up to him to play well because he doesn't have to necessarily do a lot to make that a pretty good contract.
Yeah, like he could be a 50-60 point guy. And you're still getting really good value for what that number is going to be considering the cap is going up. So Peterka's the guy I would trade, but we can have that conversation another day. I think there's other ways to improve the roster is my point here. You don't have to trade Dylan Cousins to change the mix or do something big. There's other guys that you can move, and for me, Peterka's probably the top of the list.
I think the blueprint to improve the roster, is the Ryan McLeod trade.
Yeah.
You know, Kevin Adams is too much into his prospects, and a lot of times your prospects should be used as your trade bait, not just so you have all these guys in entry-level deals who are too young and are trying to develop in the NHL. Sometimes they have to be used to get yourself NHL-level players. The McLeod for Savoy trade, the Sabres like. I'm sure there's a point at some point that here Edmonton might like it too when Savoy's in the NHL. And that's the blueprint for the Sabres right now when they have a surplus of prospects and they need to get some NHL players. That's how you're going to do it.
Goaltending. Let's wrap it up. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has had a lot of good nights this season, Mike.
Wednesday was one of them.
It's easy to overlook the fact, though, that he's also been kind of inconsistent. And when you look at these comebacks, these awful, awful comebacks that the Sabres have been on the wrong side of, Luukkonen's at the center of some of them. And it's not... Yes, they're giving up a lot in these situations, Mike, but he's also not making those big saves when you need them in those games. And it really stands. Because if all it takes is one, and especially when you're on a team that's fragile, your goalie needs to be more consistent for this. And he's got the talent. It's just a matter of he's got to put it together. He's got to be a consistent number one for this team.
All right. Here's what I'm thinking. We don't hear a lot of chatter from fans for whatever reason about Luukkonen. It's about the defense, the coaching, the power play, Seth Appert, all this other stuff. We used to hear chatter all the time about Ryan Miller. Is he good enough? Can he make the big... His banner's in the rafters, okay? Luukkonen, I don't mean to slag on Luukkonen. People say, oh, the team in front of him is terrible. I get it. I do. But here's some numbers for you, Lance. You know what Lukanen's goals against and save percentage is against the Atlantic Division this season?
I do, but I'm going to let you inform our listeners.
3.75 and 877.
Bad.
Okay? And that is when counting the fact that he's made 72 saves on 73 shots against the Ottawa Senators. So let's take out the Ottawa Senators. What are his numbers against Detroit, Florida, Montreal, and Toronto?
As ugly as you can imagine, yeah.
5.14 and 817. That's just not good enough.
No,
he hasn't been very good against the Eastern Conference. He hasn't been very good, frankly, on one day's rest when you look at his splits. He needs more than one day's rest to really play well, which is problematic. He made 35 saves against Carolina. I liked his game there. But all these comebacks like you talk about, you think about the game at Colorado, the Colton goal, the start of the third period. He doesn't stop Makar's slap shot. He doesn't stop the Devontae's breakaway in overtime. It's a breakaway, but it's not Cale Makar. He doesn't even stop the Drouin shot with 7 seconds left, which is in the slot, but is unscreened. You think of the Seattle game. What got the Seattle game out of control was Kapokako's unscreened shot from the right circle that made it 4-2. In those comebacks, there have been a lot of questionable goals from Luukkonen. He seems to be like a lot like the rest of the team. He's had some good first periods. The team gets leads. And then he tails off at the end of games as well. I mean, you think of that second Colorado game, he had a shutout going for 35 minutes and ended up giving up six goals. Yeah. So they're still looking at Lukanen. Now, to me, the problem is, you see, he's a $5 million goalie now. They signed him to that five-year deal, so that takes him to another level. He's not a young goalie anymore. Devin Levi's still a young goalie learning in the AHL. Lukanen has graduated from the AHL. He's got the big money deal. He has to play to that deal. There are times, even when your team is terrible in front of you, you have to bail them out. We have not seen enough bailouts from Lukanen this year. And just last night against Carolina, what did he do? He got his goals against average under three. His save percentage is still 899. He's under 900 for the season. For that kind of money in term, I'm expecting more from my goaltender than that.
He was better in the second half of last season than we've seen, I think, at any point this year. When you just think, when you talk about consistency, he was very good mid-January through mid-April last year. He hasn't been able to give that consistency. Some of that is the team game, but the trend I've seen, Mike, when it comes to Lukanen in the last couple of years, is he gets frustrated. He gets frustrated when the structure around him breaks down. He gets frustrated when his teammates are just making the same boneheaded mistakes, and then his game tails off as theirs does as well. He allows it to impact not only in between his ears, but it's just his technique, his structure. He plays way more loose. You look at that third period against Carolina, that first goal, it goes off of Benson's stick, but Lukanen lets it go through his arm. It's not like it goes over his head. It's not like it's a really difficult. Sometimes a guy tips a puck or one gets deflected and it's, no one's stopping that. You know, no goalie in the league is stopping that. That's one, as long as he follows the puck and tracks it well and he's in position, he's okay. But he breaks down too much. And you mentioned the one-day rest statistic and just the splits there and how he didn't practice on Thursday. That plays into what you mentioned. They gave him a little bit of rest before this game against Pittsburgh. Let's see. Like, Lindy Ruff clearly doesn't trust James Reimer right now. Do we get to the point that they start giving more starts to Devin Levi again? It's something to keep an eye on in the second half of the season. I don't advocate for it. Leave him in Rochester. Leave everybody else in Rochester unless there's injuries. But this general manager loves Devin Levi. Kevin Adams wants to give Devin Levi an opportunity every chance he gets. And with Lukanen's inconsistent play, you never know.
Yeah, and we're going to see Levi stay in Rochester at least another couple weeks here. They're going to go out west with Reimer. I don't think they're going to take Levi out of Rochester then. So then you see now you're at the end of January. Maybe you just leave Levi all the way through the Four Nations break. You know, that takes you to the end of February before you might consider him again. Reimer was fine in Vegas when he played. I assume Reimer's probably going to play next week in Vancouver on the back-to-back. It's a hard problem. And again, I think people are, I don't mean to slag on Lukanen at all. I think, first of all, I like him. I think he's a pretty good goalie. He's had a lot of good games, but you have to, with Lukanen, look deeper in the numbers. And some of the numbers just have not been good enough for a guy you've now signed on a long-term deal. And I think that's just another problem with this team. I think he's going to develop even more in the NHL, but I just need to see that consistency. I can't see him with those horrible numbers in the division because those are the teams you're chasing and competing with.
It's fair to have the discussion because we know he's capable of better than this.
Yeah,
we've seen it. We've seen the baseline, and we he's dipped below that too many times in the middle of games to where it's fair to bring up that this guy, he should be better. It's not just the team around him. So I'm Lance Lysowski. He's Mike Carrington. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Ice Time. Mike's heading out to Seattle and Western Canada here in a couple of days. So we will catch up with him while he's on the road next week. I'll be going to Rochester and handling a few other assignments. So a lot of hockey still at the play, Mike. They've only played 44 games. Yes, only 44. So there's still a lot left to talk about and still a lot to see. So thank you again for tuning in. We'll talk to you guys next time. Thanks. Ha ha.